drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and a work-at-home mom of two. I would love to devote more time to creative writing, journaling, and blogging.
And I'm Abigail Creeves, a writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm also a work-at-home mom who is just beginning to learn the ropes of balancing a baby and everything else.
And you are listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast.
Welcome back to Chasing Creative. It's season 4, episode 16. And if you're anything like Ashley and I, you get really excited about a creative project. You dive in headfirst with all the research and the setup, and then you get busy, your excitement kind of peters out, and you question whether or not you really want to do that creative thing in the first place. Or maybe you have great ideas, but just never start anything. Or maybe you like to get about 97% of the way done and stall just before the finish line. So we all have problems making our creative work a priority, but sometimes we also have problems with the work itself. Today we're chatting about those different problems that crop up and what we all might do about it. So Ashley, tell me where you stall out in your creative projects.
Yeah, so I am that person who has a bunch of ideas of all these things that I want to do, and every idea seems very important and better than the last idea. And so I end up trying to follow through with too many things because starting projects is the fun part for me. And I spread myself too thin, I end up with too much, or I get lost in the details, and I drop out about halfway through, sometimes even sooner than that, because I am jumping onto the next shiny idea that seems like more fun to start than following through with what I'm already working on.
Yes, I find mostly the same about myself, although sometimes I don't even get to like the actual starting of the project. I just like thinking about the idea, and I'll think about it and think about how awesome someday it's going to be when I do it, but I don't even like start at all. And so then, yeah, I get stuck because I either can't spend the time I want to spend on it, or it's harder than I thought it would be, or it's not going to be good. So why even start? And it is really hard then to like continue forward.
Yes. I think we are definitely in agreement there with where we get stalled out on our creative projects. So I think there are three main ways or places that people get stuck in a project. So people who get stuck at the beginning, people who get stuck in the middle, and people who get stuck at the end. So we're kind of going to run through those three scenarios and hopefully give listeners some resources for what to do with their problem points in a project. So first up is the people who can't get started, which is kind of the opposite of us. And there are a couple of problems that can contribute to this. I think one of them is people who just feel like they don't have any ideas. As writers, I'll sometimes hear from people who like say that they want to start a blog, but they don't know what to blog about, or they would like to start a freelance business, but they don't know what it should be, or that kind of thing. And it was hard for me to think about how to troubleshoot this since it's so opposite of everything in my life. But I think one book that both of us would definitely recommend wholeheartedly is Reading Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. There are lots of not even exercises, but just prompts and encouragement in that book, I think, that will sort of get your creative juices flowing. Now, would you agree with that?
Yeah. And even if you're not a reader, you can listen to her podcast. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably listen to other podcasts. Mm-hmm. But Big Magic that she did a couple of years ago, it's had a couple different seasons. She talks a lot about where ideas come from and how to just dive into a project when you're stuck. And so I think a lot of those episodes would help troubleshoot your own reasons that you can't get started too.
Yes, definitely agreed. And then some other things are like sometimes you just need to start, which I realize is not helpful if that's something that gives you trouble. But if you think about just dabbling in a new project on your own, and maybe don't skip ahead to thinking about what's going to become of this, or will this be any good, mm-hmm. or who am I going to share this with, or who's going to read this, or who's going to see this, like don't think about all that stuff. Just start doing work on your own in private, and don't show anybody if you don't want to yet. Because sometimes just starting is all you need to get those creative ideas flowing, and you can worry about sharing your creative work, which is a whole other discussion that we have already talked about. You can worry about all that stuff later. If that's all that's holding you back, then just don't think about it. Just start something, and it doesn't matter if it's good or bad because you're the only one who's going to see it.
Yeah. And if you're still just stuck and can't come up with anything that you even want to do, I would just recommend to let your mind wander a little more often. I've mentioned before how taking a long walk alone a lot of the times gives me ideas that I didn't have the 10 minutes before. So I think creating space for nothing in your day will really help you just let your mind kind of naturally find what you're interested in, or what's what's bothering you, or anything like that. So doing anything that you would normally do with someone else, like go for a hike or go to dinner or go to a movie, I find often allows you to be a little bit more introspective than you do in a normal day.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I totally agree with that. We don't often leave ourselves enough space to just not think about things. And sometimes that's where the most brilliant ideas come from, you know, like that mm-hmm. stereotype of like the brilliant idea when you're in the shower or whatever. So
yes,
giving yourself more room for those kinds of things is definitely smart. And then I think the other problem, like you mentioned a little bit, how sometimes you don't always get started on a project because you think all the fun is in the researching the project and the thinking about the project. So sometimes people get stuck because they are over researching, or because they're being a little bit too much of a perfectionist and they're worried about what the end product is going to be, so they're afraid to jump in and get started. And this is one that I can resonate with a little bit more. I am honestly not always sure how to overcome this, but I think something that helps is giving yourself a very set deadline and amount of time that you are allowed to research and have all that fun. And then after that, you have to stop. And you either don't do the project or you start the project, but you are not allowed to research the project anymore after that deadline.
Ooh, that is a good ultimatum. Either you do it or you don't, but you can stop reading about it right now.
Yes, because otherwise I could just keep going forever.
Yes, I've never, ever done that ever in my life. Right. And another resource that we both like, or at least I have read, and I think you said you want to read it, is Start by John Acuff, the book. I find it was really similar to Big Magic in that it's talking about like conquering fear and just get moving on a project, and projects take courage, but it's worth it. But it's from a very, very different voice. So whereas Big Magic can be kind of woo and maybe a little hippie, Start by John Acuff, I mean, it's written by a middle-aged white guy who's worked in the business world his entire life. It's a very, very different approach to somewhat of the same ideas. And I'll share one little quote that I remember really liking. It's on page 27 for anyone who has the book. And he says that fear tends to argue both sides of the coin, leaving you absolutely no room to stand. Here are two of the complete opposite things it will tell you. Don't chase your dream at all. Or if you chase your dream, you have to do it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that was just really spot on.
Yeah, I have not read that book, but I've had it on my list for a very long time. And I think the reason that I haven't read it, honestly, is because I'm like, I'm always starting things. That's clearly not my problem. but I really love that quote. And I, in particular, resonate with the second lie that fear tells you, which is that you have to have your dream all at once, or you have to do your dream all at once if you're going to do it. And I think a lot of us sort of feel that same sense of urgency, which is a little bit ridiculous unless you are like in your 80s and time might actually be running out, unfortunately. If you
but
are,
even then, you might have another 20.
Well, that's true. And I mean, even people who are, you know, retired, like retirement does not mean like dead. Like you still have so many decades left ahead of you. And especially for those of us who are younger, and then we feel like there's just so much stuff going on right now. Like I think we tend to forget that we don't need to do everything all at once, and just starting and taking the baby steps that we have space and time to take right now is better than not doing anything.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. And I would also mention that START has, the book by John Acuff, has some really cool like exercises and things in the back of the book too, where he's got like under the headline, punch fear in the face, he's got things like write down all of your fears and then exaggerate those fears. So in the craziest way possible, so you can see how silly it is, i.e. if the project fails, I'll get fired and blacklisted from the entire industry. All companies in every city, in every country will not hire me. I will be forever unemployed and have to grow a really crazy beard and collect cats. And so just like writing that all out to like the nth degree to show you where your mind is actually going is probably going to help you be like, that's stupid and I should not be afraid of this.
Yes, that would be a very fun exercise.
Yes. So there's a whole bunch of those in the back of that book, and I think it would be helpful for anyone. I really wish that Big Magic had had those like takeaway chapters, or before you move on to the next chapter, you do X, X, and X, and then you can learn more. And it didn't have that, and I really wish it had.
Yeah, I wish, I think that Big Magic could have done just a couple more things to make it more practical and applicable for everyday people. But that's not really... not really who Liz Gilbert is as a person. She is just sort of like out there inspirational woo-woo person, and it's sort of just up to you to go in and find whatever you can that is applicable to your life, I guess. But yeah, having actual specific exercises to do is often very helpful.
Yeah, definitely. So those are for the people who just need to get started. There's a second group of people, and this is where both Ashley and I tend to fall, is the people that get started but get bogged down and then quit. That is exactly what we typed out in our outline.
Yes.
So these people have a few problems. One of them is they have too many ideas, which sounds like something that you have personal experience with, Ashley.
I do, yeah. I experience it kind of from all angles. So I will have too many ideas for my business, which obviously like implementing a new service in your business or a new direction for your business has so many moving parts and takes up so much time. And I will often have like three or four of those ideas at the same time, which is not ideal. And then I'll have, you know, ideas for creative writing or ideas for you know, personal blogging or ideas for things that I could be doing on social media, like a new strategy I could be employing or something. And it's just too much. And whereas I know that I need to be, you know, relying on our favorite book, Essentialism by Greg McKeown, and narrowing it down to what really matters, I so often don't. And I get overwhelmed on all of them, or I don't know which of them to follow, and they all end up going nowhere. So I think my big advice for this one, which is as much advice I'm giving to myself as to everybody else, is to sort of stop and take a breath before jumping in when you have a new idea about something, and think about how that project would align with your lifestyle and the season that you're at right now, and your values and your overall purpose and your goals and all that sort of stuff. Because maybe that idea is not right for you right now. Maybe it just needs to wait. Maybe it needs to percolate for a little bit. Or, I mean, sometimes we have ideas that just are not meant to be. And that's okay. I think that's normal. Mm-hmm. So I am trying this year in particular to do a much better job of stopping and taking a breath and really evaluating all of that stuff. And Kendra Adachi from the Lazy Genius Collective has had a couple of resources this year that I think have been so helpful that we'll link to in the show notes. But one of them is her blog post called How to Set Goals Like a Normal Person. And the other is her podcast episode, The Lazy Genius Finds Her Purpose. And I think that both of those have really helped me so far to narrow down and stop from following all of those little idea bunnies that just sort of jump in and interrupt whatever I'm already doing and take away all my focus.
And I think it's important, too, that when you have those ideas, even if you can't act on them, make sure to capture them somewhere that you're going to be able to come back to. So maybe someday when you don't have an idea and you need something, you can come back to your list of things I wanted to write about or whatever it happens to be. And then you can just get started and you don't have that moment where you're like, oh, I have nothing to write about, which is horrible.
Yeah, that is a good one. And I've realized that a lot of my journaling kind of naturally does that, where I'll like jot down, you know, like, oh, I've been thinking about this thing, and I'll go back and reread entries from, you know, a couple of months later down the road, and I'll be like, oh yeah, that's right, I was thinking about that. And every now and then it'll turn into something, but more often than not I look back on it and I'm like, oh yeah, I thought that was a good idea, but it really wasn't. Sometimes it's still like, it's nice to have that, a record of that, of all the things that you've thought about, because still maybe someday it could be the right idea. But it's also nice to be able to see, like, most often those things that I could have gone off chasing that would have stalled out projects on other things were not worth it. And so it's good that I stopped and I didn't do them, or I didn't have time for them, and they just didn't happen right now, and that's okay. And maybe I can write about it and turn it into a blog lesson or something.
That is smart. And that would be my piece of advice for this person who has too many ideas and can't decide or can't make time for any of them. Ask yourself what you would have to give up in order to make this new idea possible. And there are some things that we can't give up, like we've talked about. Like, we still have to feed ourselves and we need to sleep if we're going to remain sane. But ask yourself what you could actually theoretically give up. And if that idea makes you happy, then follow that new idea. If it makes you sad or overwhelmed, maybe it's just not the right time or the right project. And you need to capture it and then have a season of waiting until you decide if it is right or not.
Yes, I totally agree with that. So often we just feel the excitement of a new idea that we don't stop to take the time to think about what implementing it would actually make your life look like. And that can be a totally different story. So that is really excellent advice. And it leads into, I think, the other problem that most people who get stuck in this kind of middle phase of a project have, which is they're not always realistic about their life schedule or about what they are able to prioritize right now. So even if you have done a really good job of focusing on your ideas and, you know, cutting out what's not right for you in this season, we all still only have 24 hours in a day. And depending on the season of life that you're in right now, you really might not have time to prioritize even just those one or two things. And it's, or maybe you're just not being realistic about how much time you have, so you get frustrated. And if you just took a step back and thought, well, maybe I don't have time to work on this project every single day, but if I could find time just once a week, that's still making baby steps forward. And sort of just thinking about it in more terms of more realistic expectations, I think, is something that a lot of people struggle with. Do you ever have trouble with that?
Yes. I have always been overly optimistic about how quickly I can work and how much I'll get done. And my to-do lists are always like, I mean, 8 times as long as they ought to be, because you're just never going to be able to cross it all off. So definitely being realistic about what your life looks like today, not what you wish it looked like or what you think it might look like in a week or two, but what it actually looks like and what you have, you do have time to do, is really important to make sure you don't get overwhelmed. Because I find that as soon as I get overwhelmed about everything that I have to do, anything that I was excited about now feels like a burden. And I find that if you let your creative projects become a burden, they're kind of defeating their own purpose.
Yeah, that is very, very true. So one trick that I will use to sometimes help myself combat that is, if I'm feeling overwhelmed with everything I have to do, or if I'm debating on taking on a new project, I will make a list of all my other commitments so that I can see if I'm being a crazy person or not. And so that I can also see, like, is there anything in here that I could cut out or cut back on? And oftentimes the answer is no. Like, most of the things on my plate right now are necessary things involving, you know, keeping my kids alive. And so it really limits what I'm able to do. And it means that if I'm making a commitment, I'm making like a fairly long-term commitment, because even smaller projects are going to take me a longer time to complete. So it really forces me to, again, go back and like reevaluate, does this idea fit with what I want to be doing right now? And you kind of have to be hard on yourself about that in certain seasons, just to make sure that your schedule doesn't explode. And then you end up, you know, feeling overwhelmed, feeling resentful of this project that should have been awesome.
Yeah, no, that is true. I love that you make a list of everything you are doing, because I feel like so often we don't feel like we're getting anything done in a day, especially when you're caretaking of anyone else but yourself. And so having a list where you're like, these are all the things I am doing, makes it seem like you are actually moving forward every day, even if it doesn't feel like it. So this is something that I have never done, but I've heard other people say helps them. And I think as a serial yes person, i.e. someone who has said yes to people because she feels like she ought to say yes and not because she wants to, consider making a to not do list. So listing out things that you aren't going to do anymore that detract from your goal, i.e. spending time on Facebook or folding fitted sheets or volunteering for that project at your kid's classroom that always makes you just exhausted by the time you get home. And even when you do get home, you don't want to do anything. Making Valentine's cards from scratch. Like, maybe there are things that even you really like to do and you're just not going to do them right now because you don't want to do them as much as you want to do other things.
Yeah. And I think that's the part that nobody wants to do, is it's like you have to sometimes give up something, even something good, even if it's just for a little bit, if you're going to make room for other things. And nobody ever wants to face that reality. But like, you are, you know, like this year I lowered my reading goal, and I love to read, but I know that if I'm going to get some of these other things done that I want to do, I can't keep reading almost 50 books a year, because it's just not going to happen. That time has to come from somewhere. So, you know, taking a hard look at that and the things that you're not going to do anymore is really, really smart. Yes. I also like the idea of tracking your time, which I know is very tedious to some people. It used to be very tedious to me too. But I started using the Toggle app, which is T-O-G-G-L. I can link to it in the show notes. I've started using that last year to track my time for work, so that I could see specifically like how much time I was spending on different work projects and different clients and all that. But then I realized that it had a good broader application to my life. So I started using it a little bit more widely. And it shows you, you know, oh, in my head, I think I can get dinner on the table in 30 minutes. But in reality, it always takes a full hour, sometimes more. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, I always think that I'm going to spend just a quick minute tidying up after the kids, and I always end up, you know, putting away everything in the entire house and it takes 45 minutes. Or, you know, just it shows you a real picture of how you're spending your time, because I think many of us are overly optimistic and many of us are maybe wasting time in ways that we don't realize. And if you start tracking it, you are forced to allocate those minutes and hours somewhere, and it really shows you that you might have more time than you realize, or maybe you could rearrange the way that you're doing things to open up a bigger time block that would allow you to tackle a new project. So like I said, I like Toggle for that, but I know Laura Vanderkam has a resource for this from her book, I Know How She Does It, which is a really great book if anybody's more interested in time management. But we can link to that in the show notes as well. She has just a time log. I think it's based on like every 30 minutes that she invites people to fill out. I think it's printable, or you can just fill it out on your computer. So that's another option if anybody's interested in trying out time tracking.
Yes. And I think an additional tip is, if you're trying to get a creative project done, make sure to tell the people around you. Don't commit to something, even if it's just in your head, and then expect everyone in your family or your extended circles to just get out of your way and leave you alone, because we all know that that never happens. They don't even leave you alone while you make dinner. They're certainly not going to leave you alone while you try to write the next great American novel. So tell your people what you want and what you need so that they can help create the space. And sometimes that's not going to be your ideal space. Like, every day I want to get up and have nobody pester me until noon so that I can get all the writing that I want to done. That's likely just not going to happen. But maybe they can give you a few hours here and there and uninterrupted hours, which are far more useful than those like tiny 5-minute pockets here and there that you normally get.
Yeah, that is so true. And I think it's easy to have this thing that you're all excited about in your head, and then you get really frustrated because people aren't leaving you alone, and you realize that you never actually told them what you're doing. And like, that's not their fault, that's your fault. So
I am super guilty of this.
Something to be mindful of. That brings us to the last group of people, which I definitely am not in this category, and I don't think you are either, but these are the people who get really, really far in a project and then just can't close the deal, which I'd imagine must just be the most frustrating, disappointing feeling ever. I wouldn't know because I never get this far generally. But I have heard that the book Finish by John Acuff, who wrote Start, is a good book, and I haven't read it, but this one is also on my list because I'm the person who gets stuck in the middle, so I was thinking that it might be a helpful resource. Have you read that one?
I have not, but I should, and I don't actually own that one. For a while, I bought like a ton of businessy books and was like, I'm going to read all of these and be the best at everything. And then I just never read them. So clearly, I'm now not the best at everything.
Obviously.
But Finish did not make it onto the shelf. It must have been like before it came out or something. I would like to read it because, like I said, John Acuff books are usually pretty, pretty easy to get through. Like, they tend to be fun reads. They're not as stuffy as a lot of business books. So I could see Finish being a good one for both of us to tackle.
Yeah. So that is a good resource for people to give a try if they are at this point in a project where you're like really, really far and you just can't find the motivation to finish. I would also challenge people, I guess, to take some time to look at any half-finished or mostly finished creative projects and ask yourself why you're walking away. So, like, did it get too hard, or did the excitement that you had at the beginning just kind of run out, or did something better come along, like you got distracted by another new idea? Sometimes just sort of evaluating can tell you what you need to do in order to push through and reach the actual finish line. Like, maybe you just need to get some expert advice, or maybe you need a little bit more knowledge in a certain area or a new tool, and it's time to go back to the research phase for a week or two to get the information you need to push out that last like 10% of your mostly done project.
But without getting stuck, don't get stuck back in the research cycle. Like, give yourself a set amount of time, like a week, and then move forward.
Yes.
Like, don't let that be the point at which you derail either. Mm-hmm.
Totally agree.
And I would also challenge anyone who's stuck in this phase to think about how walking away from the project will make you feel. Do you have a lot of guilt hanging around from all of the unfinished projects in your life? Maybe this next project is one that can help you conquer that and kind of break yourself out of the cycle of project abandonment. And if it's fear that's stopping you from finishing, I would caution you to remember that you don't have to share the finished project with anyone. Like Ashley said at the beginning of the episode, we often get scared to start a project because we think we're going to need to share it. And you don't have to share anything, not even if you finish it. So you can just be done and put it in a drawer and never look at it again. But I would wager that any of us would feel better having done that project and finished that project, so that we could move on to the next one in clear conscience.
Yes, I totally agree with that. And I wish that I had more advice to offer these people, but I have just never made it that far through a project. Usually if I can get myself past the like 50 to 70% of the way done mark, if I can get myself past that point, I am usually able to push through and finish, because then seeing the finish line like gets me excited about a project again. So I wish all of you non-finishers luck, because I'm not sure what else to tell you, but you can do it.
Yes. I agree. I've not been so close to the end and not been able to close the project. So I'm hoping that maybe someone will have some advice for our listeners and they can share it via email or social media or something. And we can go ahead and share that with our audience too.
Yeah, for sure. If anybody has some good tips for this, you can send us an email or, you know, leave an Instagram comment or something and we will share it in a future episode. So I think those are pretty much all the places where people get stuck on creative projects. So are we ready for mini book club?
I think we are. So what did you read this week?
So I have been reading a book of essays called The Opposite of Loneliness by Marina Keegan. And it's kind of unique because it was all the stories, there are some short fiction stories and some nonfiction pieces. And it was written by a Yale graduate who was killed in a car accident 5 days after graduation. So there's a really tragic story behind it. And the author's family and friends and a couple of her professors, I think, went through and collected some of her work and put it together and published it. And what you end up with is this collection of stories and essays that just has this really tragic context surrounding it because she was 22 and she had this promising writing career ahead of her. And so you're reading all of these stories knowing that the person who wrote them is gone and is never going to be able to achieve those dreams and reach that full potential. And I think that's really where the beauty of the book comes from. There's a really gorgeous introduction by Anne Fadiman, who is just an excellent writer. I love her work. And she was the author's advisor and I think her professor in a couple of classes. And I think she was probably the main driving force behind publishing the book. And it's tough because the work itself isn't necessarily great. Like, the writing is definitely good. And I mean, she was a Yale writing student, so she's obviously got talent. But like they said in the introduction, these were all assignments for either the school newspaper or for her writing classes in college. And I don't know about you, but if somebody went through and published my college essays after I died, I would probably be mortified because, like,
you would die again.
Well, right. I mean, there are things that I would have wanted to revise and change, and you were never anticipating that they would be shared with this wider audience because, you know, there were due dates on them and you had other assignments and you were working and things got turned in at the last minute. And so I feel bad being too harsh about the writing, knowing the both the tragic circumstances that the book was published in and also the fact that she did not have the opportunity that every other writer gets to go back and polish their work and make sure that it's actually what they want to send out into the world. But I have to say that it's not quite my cup of tea. Like, the first few essays were pretty good, and I liked the nonfiction better than the fiction. Her fiction writing is just not to my taste. I didn't actually read all the fiction stories. I think I read two or three and then was like, this is not really my thing. I don't know. It was just kind of a decent book, but a sad one, just knowing the surrounding circumstances, I think. I wouldn't not recommend it, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend it either.
Yeah. I remember reading that one a few years ago, and I really liked the title essay called The Opposite of Loneliness, which I think was a reprint from the school paper that she wrote for. Mm-hmm. So it is something that she had written and knew was going into the hands of the people. And I think that made a difference for me too. Like you, I had a really hard time dealing with the fact, like, she didn't get to consent to send these essays out into the world as is. And that was a little unsettling. She definitely has a gift. She's a very talented writer. But it felt a lot to me similar to Emma Klein's The Girls that came out this last year, or 2 years ago, I think, to critical acclaim. And she was a super young writer. I think she's 26 and publishing, signed a 2-book deal and publishing her first novel. And the writing felt somewhat exhibitionist to me, both in The Opposite of Loneliness and then also in The Girls, like writing over the top characters and things for the sake of writing them and I guess making a splash. And to me, that's not my style either. So I totally agree with you that the fiction just kind of fell flat for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would agree that The Opposite of Loneliness, that title essay, like you said, is one of the best ones in the book. And I think it's because that essay was, I think it was possibly the last one that she wrote for the newspaper at the school. And it was about, you know, graduation and chasing your dreams. And the whole thing was kind of like, we are so young. We have so much time to do all of these things that we want to do. And so the weight of that message combined with the knowledge that she died like weeks after she wrote it, maybe even just days after she wrote it, I think the tragedy of that is what makes it so good. And the rest of the essays that aren't about that are kind of just, I mean, you know, it's college writing. It's, she definitely would have been great if she had had the chance to like go on and continue honing her writing skills, but unfortunately she didn't get the chance to. So yeah.
Yeah. I feel the same way about that collection, as I have not yet read Paul Kalanithi's When Breath Becomes Air, but I just know that when I do sit down and read it, and I want to, I'm probably going to like sob through the entire thing. And now is just not that time. So.
Yeah, I am afraid of that book because I have heard enough about it to know that it's going to make me cry. And I'm like, you know, I'm just not sure if I want to do that right now with like pregnancy hormones and soon to be postpartum hormones. And I might just leave that one for other people for a while. So
yeah, in a decade or so, we'll be able to handle that one. Yeah. Although on a happy note, the Kalanithi, what is the word for when you leave someone behind? Widow. But yeah, widow, his widow. Ended up meeting the widower left behind by the gal who wrote, I'm not going to remember what the title is. There was a woman who also wrote like an end of life memoir, and her husband, who was left when she died, met up with Paul Kalanithi's now wife, and they're together.
Oh.
So like their dying spouse's memoirs brought them together, and now they're in a like long-term committed relationship together. And who better to help someone through that point of their life than someone else who just experienced the same exact thing?
Yeah, that is so crazy. But also,
I will find that article.
Kind of like a nice, I mean, I don't want to call it quite a happy ending, but at least a redemptive one. Like it makes you feel a little bit better reading either of those memoirs. It would at least sort of console me and make me feel better about reading something so tragic.
Yes. So I will find that article and put it in the show notes so you guys can all read that article, which probably made me happy cry. So I read something far less emotionally challenging. I read Reading People by Anne Bogle. Finally, I've worked my way through it, which for anyone who doesn't know, I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, is kind of a really brief overview that walks you through a bunch of different personality typing systems and tells you like why they might be relevant to your own life. So it's a pretty quick, easy read. It doesn't go too deep into any one of the systems. So if you're not familiar with any of them, whether it's Myers-Briggs or the Enneagram, you can kind of hop into Reading People and get a really nice overview without getting overwhelmed by all of the information that you typically find when you hit Google.
Yeah, I read this one last summer, towards the end of last summer, I think, because I was on the launch team for it. So I got it a little bit early and I really enjoyed it. I have since revisited it a couple of times, not the whole book, but just paging through chapters here and there. And it really is a nice overview of all the different types. But I also thought she did such a good job of maybe getting into the why we do personality types and how it's not necessarily to put ourselves into a box or to try to explain everything about ourselves, but it's just giving yourself another perspective to like a lens through which you see the world and through which you see your own self-awareness so that you can sort of be cognizant of, oh, these are my tendencies. Do I want to play into that? Or like, these are my strengths and these are my weaknesses. How can I use these rather than like trying to force yourself into some little box and then closing the lid forever? I just thought she, she did a fantastic job of like how to use those tools, effectively to improve your life rather than let them define your life.
Yes, I agree. And I just liked that she kind of lays everything out pretty matter of fact and kind of lets you do with it what you want to do with it. There's no, you know, takeaways or action items at the end. Like, now make a list of your 5 favorite things about yourself. Like, none of that cheesiness that I think a lot of personality, I guess, essays or things like kind of deal with.
Yeah, totally agree. So, right. Yeah. That was a good read on your end. Awesome. So next week we have a different show in store. So we are not typically doing guest interviews this season, but we are making an exception next week when we chat with Callie Fian again. This will be her 3rd time on the podcast, and it's because we love her as a writer and a person, and because she keeps doing really brave, creative things, and we just have to keep up with her and keep asking her questions about how she is bravely living this creative life, because she's one of the best. So Callie has a new book coming out on Valentine's Day called The Teacher Diaries, Romeo and Juliet, which is very appropriate for a February 14th launch date. And she's going to tell us all about how she made the time to write an entire book in the same year that she moved, changed jobs twice, and remained a sane human who had children and a family to take care of. So you can look forward to that, and we will see you next week. Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Creeves or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If you'd like to help us bring this podcast to life each week, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/chasingcreative.
And if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.